March. March Madness is upon us. The Badgers are 26-9 so far this season, and they've earned the number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament's East region. On the other hand, Marquette is 23-10 overall, and they're the number 7 seed in the South region. So what can we expect from these teams in the tournament this year? Larry Mueller here again for WPR News. Talking college hoops with a couple of experts today. Ben Wargle, senior writer at BadgerBlitz.com. And he's been covering Wisconsin football, basketball, and recruiting since 2004. Ben Wargle, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And with us as well, Ben Steele. He covers the Marquette Golden Eagles men's basketball team and other sports topics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Ben Steele, welcome to you. Thanks for joining in.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Excited to share the airwaves with you, two fine gentlemen.
Okay. Well, as you listen to these guys, I hope you'll join in. You may be planning to watch the NCAA tournaments, want to know which teams you're cheering for. Have you filled out your brackets yet? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, I'm going to ask you guys kind of the same question to begin with. Ben Wargle, start with you. You've covered dozens of March Madnesses. What do you love about this time of year, and what do you dread?
I love about this time of year is that there is the desperation of every game where, you know, if you have a bad game, you're done. And it really can define your season, especially when it comes to, I think, Wisconsin in recent years. Wisconsin's had some great teams under Greg Gard, and they've gone into the NCAA tournament with some great teams and have had bad shooting stretches. They've had an injury here or there, and suddenly in 140 minutes, your season is done. And I think that's where the dread comes in, too, because, you know, you look at these teams that look, hey, this team could go really far, and you run into a hot shooting mid-major team with a lot of experience. You run into an injury, and all of a sudden it's just over like that. And the job you've been doing since, you know, mid-September, all of a sudden you're in the off-season mode very quickly. And I think that's what makes this tournament so exciting is the unpredictability of it. I mean, the odds of a perfect bracket are like one in a gazillion or something like that. It never happens. And I think that's what makes it fun is this, the unexpectedness of the tournament and the ability of a team no one expected, like Florida Gulf Coast a couple of years ago, wins a couple of games, gets the Sweet 16, Purdue losing in the first round as a one seed, Virginia losing in the first round as a one seed. That's what makes the tournament fun.
Yeah. Ben Steele, what about you? How long you've been writing about March Madness for a bit of time. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's the unpredictability. Me and Ben can throw a bunch of stats at you about Montana and who Wisconsin is playing, and Marquette's going to play New Mexico, and I can watch a bunch of film on both teams, but that all goes out the window. Whatever we say to you today, probably the exact opposite is going to happen when these teams play tomorrow or later this week. You know, with that unpredictability comes, that finite end of the season. And just the dread, you asked about the dread, covering these teams, man, just the pain that you see on the pain of the players and the coaches in the locker room after that sudden end of the season. That's always like a little heartbreaking to see. And as a journalist, you have to go in there and ask questions anyway. We're human beings too. So just seeing that pain on the players and coaches' faces, that's the dark side of March.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're still with us, what'd you think of Marquette's year this year? I mean, they started like a house of fire.
They were trending toward a 2 seed, which they've been the last couple of years. And since February 1st, they kind of hit a little rough stretch for the last month and a half of the season, regular season. There's a lot of reasons for that. Marquette's a team that doesn't rely on the transfer portal like other teams. So I think at the beginning of the season, they have that continuity advantage where other teams are trying to figure themselves out a little bit. Marquette's already there. And then other teams kind of catch up with them right at the end of the regular season once they've had time to gel. Marquette's often gotten banged up. Several players are just nursing nagging injuries. Now that's pretty much every team this time of year. And the other side of the Marquette not using the transfer portal is all their bench guys are younger developing players, whereas other teams, you know, will bring in like a 22, 23-year-old just to help out off the bench. Marquette guys are younger, and I think that sometimes when they face other teams that have that age advantage, that's where Marquette can struggle a little bit.
Yeah. And Ben Wergel, what about Wisconsin's year this year? And Ben Steele was mentioning pulling some players in. You know, at the start of the year, you wondered if Wisconsin was going to do anything after losing two premier players.
Yeah, they actually lost seven players to the portal and a starter in Tyler Walls. I mean, you had to replace three starters from your lineup. And you go into the portal and you pick up a guy from Central Arkansas named Cameron Hunter. And you thought, okay, you know, this is going to be a point guard that Wisconsin is going to utilize to help replace Chucky Hepburn. Well, that hasn't materialized this year. Then you pick up a guy named Xavier Amos from Northern Illinois, who's going to be a junior. And he's done some good things, but it's kind of struggled to adjust a little bit to the Big Ten level. And then this third guy from Colorado State and Missouri named John Tonji, who only played, six-ish games last year, had a knee injury. Well, he's an older guy. He played 4 years at Colorado State. You know, maybe he can kind of help replace what Wisconsin's losing with A.J. Storr. And that's part of the reason why Wisconsin was picked to finish a tie for 12th in the league. And, you know, no one could have predicted what John Tonji has been able to do for this team and how he's elevated all the players around him. I mean, you know, Wisconsin didn't play the toughest non-conference schedule as they've had in the past, but, you know, in the fourth game, they have a return game against Arizona, who's ranked ninth in the country, and Tonji drops like 41 points on the Wildcats. And you go, oh, my goodness, you know, can this be sustained? And then, you know, about a week and a half later, he drops 30-plus against Pittsburgh to win a November holiday tournament. You go, okay, you know, maybe this offense and John Tonji can be a real – you know, potent thing, and that's been the case all season long. I mean, Wisconsin has been averaging the most points they've had since the 71-72 season. They've scored over 17 times this year. I mean, there were years where Wisconsin was winning games in the 40s, and now it's consistently with this team putting up 70-plus, 80-plus, and Tonji's been a big part of that. You know, he was held scoreless against USC on January 18th, and ever since then, he has scored the most points in the nation. He's averaging 21.4 since January 21st. He's got five games over 30, and he really carried them to that Big Ten title game where he simply just ran out of gas. So Wisconsin has used the portal selectively. They don't just go for any old player. They go for the right fit. And Wisconsin knew they were having a much older locker room this year with guys like Stephen Kral and Max Klesmant and Carter Gilmore and Kamari McGee, guys that have been around for several years. To add a veteran six-year guy into that locker room who's very humble, very workmanlike, doesn't have all the answers, it's just been a perfect marriage between John Tonji and Wisconsin. It's part of the reason why that they're sitting where they're sitting going into Thursday's NCAA tournament opener.
I would think, you know, just the opener, it's as I'm looking at the clock right now, and it's, I believe the Badgers are just getting into the air to fly to, out to Colorado. And I did want to mention, I was really disappointed in the seedings, and I think some other people were too, of having to play, not getting Milwaukee for one thing for the tournament, but then having to play, to go to Colorado and play on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't get back to Madison until midnight on Sunday, and then they're leaving today for Colorado. It just didn't seem fair.
And you have to deal with the altitude, too, of Denver.
Yeah,
that's another thing, too. And Tanjay, who played 4 years at Colorado State, kind of talked about that and, you know, the adjustment period that, you know, it's going to take. But, you know, they're going to get there today. They're going to go through a practice tomorrow. And so, I mean, there'll be time to adjust. Other teams have to adjust to it, too. But, you know, Montana, I don't think, has as much of an adjustment to the altitude. Michigan's the same way. Michigan is coming out to Colorado, too, on the other side of the bracket. You know, you look at Wisconsin's profile, you know, 8 quadrant one wins, 18 wins in quadrant one and two, no losses outside quadrant two. You know, you get to the Big Ten tournament title game. You would think that'd be enough to get to Milwaukee, but the problem is, you know, there's, what, 14 teams from the SEC in. The committee talked about they didn't want to put more than 4 schools from any one conference in, and that kind of caused them to kind of, you know, bounce around teams. No one lost the seed, according to the committee, but you had to kind of move regions around. You know, on the seed list, Kentucky and Iowa State were the two teams directly above Wisconsin. Iowa State put together a really good year. They were 16-9 in the top two quadrants. You know, they're the closest region or the closest pod to Iowa State is Milwaukee, since Wichita was out with Texas Tech and Houston. Kentucky can't play in Lexington because they're the host city, and you look up at Cleveland, that's the nearest a near site to them, too, and Michigan State's going there. I forget what other school's going there, and so they're going to Milwaukee. And so just kind of the way it bounced, I know a lot of people were disappointed, but, you know, frankly, if Wisconsin beats Penn State and or Oregon down the stretch, you know, we're not having that topic of conversation. And I will say, too, Greggard has talked for many, many years, is that he's spoken to the league about this, that the teams that play Sunday in the Big Ten title game should at least have a Friday site, just for that extra rest, that for the travel, for all those things. It's kind of like yelling into the wind a little bit because it hasn't changed in all those years. But, you know, it's not an excuse. They were happy for the 3 seed. They're happy for the pod. And I think it's actually a pretty good pod for Wisconsin, too. And so just maybe with how they play on Sunday, maybe a quick turnaround for them, getting a chance to play again on Thursday is the right thing for them.
Ben Steele, what about Marquette? Are they more or less happy with where they are and their seating and so forth?
Yeah, I guess all things considered, you know, with their late season struggles, Marquette was kind of trending toward an 8, not quite a 9, but an 8 seed, you know, that's a tough draw. You know, if you've managed to get by an 8-9 game, which is a, you know, generally a coin flip game, without that outcome, like, then you'd have to face the top seeded team in the next round. So getting up to a 7 seed for Marquette was probably the best thing for them. They face a New Mexico team that, quite frankly, I didn't know much about, but I don't think Marquette coaches, they're diving into the film these last couple of days. It's an interesting matchup for them. If they get past New Mexico, then they'll play Michigan State, that Ben mentioned them going to be in Cleveland. That's going to be an interesting game because the Marquette and Michigan State met 2 years ago, also in Ohio, in Columbus. So it could be an interesting matchup should both teams advance from there. Kind of a bad matchup. Michigan State would be a bad matchup for Marquette. Marquette kind of struggles against bigger teams with bigger front lines, wide-bodied. Ben knows this. He's seen Michigan State a bunch of times. Those defense and hardcore rebounding teams of Tom Izzo, those are the kind of teams that give Marquette trouble. So if Marquette manages to get by the first round, that's going to be a tough matchup for them in the second round if Michigan State advances too.
Yeah. And Wisconsin, Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Montana hasn't played a ton of high-level competition. That's kind of what you expect from the Big Sky Conference. Wisconsin played Montana State earlier in the year. I mean, not really much you can kind of glean from that. I think that was the second or third game of the year. Montana's a little bit shorter. They don't have anyone taller than 6'8", so one would think that Stephen Crowell and Noel Winter can be aggressive early. I think Montana is like the 18th worst offensive rebounding rate in the country. You know, they're proficient with their field goal percentage, though. They have the 13th highest effective field goal percentage in the country, about 56.4%. They have a bunch of guards that can shoot it well from distance. I think they have four players who shoot over 35% from three. Just looking up here real quick. Grizzlies, they lost to Oregon in the second game of the year by 31. They lost to Tennessee by 35. So two NCAA tournament teams. Wisconsin obviously played Oregon a couple weeks ago and lost in overtime. So there's a little bit of comparison there. But one would think that this is a game that Wisconsin should be able to win. And then you look into the next round against BYU from the Big 12. They've been known to shoot it exceptionally well. They've had some good wins on their resume. And then, you know, VCU wins the regular season and the tournament Atlantic 10 championship. So those would be two interesting. If Wisconsin advances, either one would be a very interesting and a tough matchup for them as well.
Yeah. Talking with Ben Wargle, the senior writer at BadgerBlitz.com. He's been covering Wisconsin football, basketball, and recruiting for 21 years. Ben Steele covers Marquette Golden Eagles men's basketball team and other sports topics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Questions, comments, gripes or not, give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Ben Wargle and Ben Steele. Ben Wargle writes for Badger Blitz. Ben Steele writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Great to have them with us as we talk the NCAA tournament. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. Ben Wargle, back to you for a minute. I'm wondering, and Ben Steele, I'll be asking you this question as well. Who surprised you off the bench this year? I thought we got some pretty good bench help that I was somewhat surprised at in a couple of instances.
Yeah, I thought we'd see more Kamari McGee this year, the reserve point guard from Racine, especially with Chucky Hepburn departing and leaving him on the bench in favor of John Blackwell starting, I think was the right move. The amount of energy that McGee has brought to the table this season, I think, has really kind of benefited this team, a little bit of change of pace. I think Jack Janicki, you saw him during fall camp, and this was a kid that really could shoot the ball well, very hard-nosed, very aggressive defensively. And so his performance this year didn't surprise me. Carter Gilmore with his offense has got to be one of the biggest surprises of the year for this team. I mean, he went 120 career games without scoring in double figures, and then he drops 12 or 14 against Northwestern. I think it was 14, I'm forgetting. And then the next game, he gets MVP chance as he gets in double figures again. And, you know, he's always been underappreciated, and I think a large segment of the fan, a small vocal segment of the fan base have really disliked his usage over the years. But he's an eraser for Wisconsin. He erases mistakes. He's very smart defensively. He can play a number of different positions. Wisconsin's used him at the five at times this year to be a little bit more mobile. The block that he had on Trey Holloman, the amount of distance that he had to cover in the Big Ten semifinals was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And just his confidence, he's grown with his confidence this season, and that's allowed him to shoot the ball more. And I think Wisconsin wanting to encourage guys to shoot from the perimeter more when they're open, not pass up open looks, and the amount of work that he put in the gym in the off season has really kind of helped lift his game this season. I mean, he's shooting 35% from three after going a combined 9 for 55 in his first 4 years at Wisconsin. So that's probably one of the feel-good stories of this team this year, is what Gilmore has brought off the bench and how the narrative of the fan base has changed from more with disdain when he comes in to a really profound appreciation for the work that he's done this year for this team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Ben Steele, the Marquette bench, it's a young bench, but you got a lot of promising people there, have you not?
Marquette really relies on its starters. And like I mentioned earlier, it's all freshmen and sophomores coming off the bench for the Golden Eagles. So that in and of itself means that there's going to be up and down performances from these young players. But a couple of guys have stood out to me. A guy like Zade Lowry, who's a sophomore, didn't play much last season, was expected to take a bigger role this season, and he's been up and down. He had a career high, like 25 points against Villanova just about a month ago. It looked like he was going to take off from there, but then he takes a step back, and I don't think he's had 25 combined points in the games since then. But the talent is there when you see it, just the way he moves and the way he can guard different positions. He's a kind of, you know, he's like a 6'5", fluid athlete, those kind of switchable guys that Shaka Smart likes to play, who can guard you full court. Another guy who I wasn't expecting much as a freshman, but has impressed me and several times this season is Royce Parham. Marquette doesn't have a lot of front court depth. Royce Parham's usually the first big guy off the bench. I was particularly impressed with him last week in the Big East tournament. You know, sometimes under the hot lights at Madison Square Garden, you know, in a full house. This was Royce's first postseason game in college, so it was impressive to me that he came out there and had 10 points. The most impressive thing about Royce Parham is he's not afraid of the moment. He's not shy about putting up shots. I think he put up 4 threes in that game in about 10, 15 minutes. He gives Marquette a little more fluid, a little more shooting from the big guy spot. So those are a couple names off the bench for Marquette. But Marquette really does rely on its starters quite a bit.
Yeah. Jim and Stevens Point has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Just a question for Ben about Wisconsin's offensive scheme and its change or metamorphosis over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the big storyline this year. It really kind of began two postseasons ago when Wisconsin missed the tournament and went to the NIT and had a really good run and until they went to the semifinals and played North Texas, and then they didn't score for like the final 9-plus minutes of the game. And I think it became abundantly clear to Greg Garden and his staff that they needed to evolve. And it really kind of came to a head two Novembers ago when they got really beaten badly at Providence, for those that remember that game in the Big Ten, Big East Challenge. They got stuck in Providence for an extra long period of time because of weather issues, and the coaching staff kind of sat around and discussed about what they needed to do, and they decided to go all in to making this change. And, you know, the addition of Kirk Penny, who had recently retired as a special assistant to the head coach, he's really had his fingerprints involved with all of this because of the amount of international play that Kirk has done all over the world. He's playing all these different offenses and really just more of a ball screen, spread the floor type scheme. And they felt that that was something they could really, you know, take advantage of with how the rules have changed. It's gone to more of an offensive game and a defensive game. You know, Wisconsin's not going to have a guy like Brad Davidson drawing 7 charges in a game anymore. That's just not how the game is called and officiated. So Wisconsin kind of made that move last year, and they really benefit from it at some points. Other stretches they didn't have all the personnel they needed to really run it, and this year they moved some pieces around with John Blackwell in the starting lineup, the addition of John Tanjay, the development of guys in the system, and it just really has taken off. I mean, it's one thing to score a lot of points, but it's one thing to be very efficient with your offense, and Wisconsin is the 13th most efficient offense in the country with their adjusted offensive efficiency, and that's really been the catalyst for this team. The defense has also helped. The defense has massively improved from where it was when they played Marquette in December, when they got beat badly defensively against UCLA in January. It'll be interesting to see if they can sustain this going forward because you're losing a lot of pieces. You're going to have to go into the portal again. Can Wisconsin find the right pieces to make this offense that they have now established as their brand of basketball? Can they make that work next year with an entirely new cast of characters?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. In the meantime, I've noticed just going around on the social media and so forth, A lot of the prognosticators are picking Wisconsin as a dark horse. They're typically listed in the top 10 teams that might win the, or that stood a chance to win the tournament. I'll ask you both, who do you think's going to win the tournament this year? Is there any idea, Ben Wargle?
Well, whenever I fill out my bracket, I always know that I'm going to get most of it wrong. It's one of those things where a little bit of information that we know as sports writers tends to be the death of us all when we do a bracket. But the one thing I do know is that 88% of Final Four teams are in the top 50 in both adjusted offense and adjusted defense. And that's according to a site called KenPom.com. And so I look at teams that can score well and can defend well. Teams like Auburn, Iowa State, Duke, Alabama, Houston, Wisconsin is on that list. They're 13th in offense and I think 27th on defense. I think Florida is the most complete team in the country. They're first in offense, 10th in defense. When I fill out my bracket, I'm probably going to lean using those analytics of the team that can really score well and defend well. I think Wisconsin has a chance to get to a Sweet 16. I think they have a good chance to get to a Sweet 16. It would be the first time since, I think, 2017. It's been a long stretch. I'll be interested to see what they can do after that because I think for a lot of fans, get to the Sweet 16, you're kind of playing with house money at that point, and you just need two really good games, and you're in the Final Four. So that's what makes this tournament fun, just the unpredictability of it.
And we got about in the 30 seconds, Ben Steele. What do you think about how the tournament's going to turn out?
Wow, 30 seconds. Can I get in my predictions for every game of the tournament in that stretch? No, like Ben said, look at the offense. Look at teams with really good offenses, really good defenses. I would keep your eye on any team from the SEC that's probably the best conference in the history of college basketball this season. They got 14 teams in the field this year, and Florida, I think, is the best one out of all of them. Just the way they offensive rebound, they can play any type of style, fast, slow. They can
really do everything.
they can do everything.
So. Well, here we are out of time. I agree with you on Florida for sure, and that's probably going to be in the big center of my bracket, Florida. Thank you very much, Ben Wargle, writer for BadgerBlitz.com. Ben Steele writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Great to have them with us. And thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.